Hello, this is Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, July 29th, 2020. We'll start our reading today, as we usually do, on the front page of the paper. Today we'll start with the article, "Danville Still Betting on Haven," by Jennifer Bailey. Danville is still betting on Haven Gaming for the city's casino license. As soon as the Illinois Gaming Board's agenda became public Tuesday morning for its Thursday meeting, Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. and Haven Gaming LLC were finalizing statements about what it meant for Haven to withdraw its initial Danville Casino license application. On the agenda for the 10 a.m. teleconference IGB meeting under Casinos, is a request to withdraw owner's license application by Haven Gaming LLC. In response, Haven Gaming and Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. on Tuesday issued statements. Through an email to local media, Williams said, "As I promised, I am updating you regarding the status of the Danville Casino application. Please see the attached press releases from Haven Gaming LLC and the City of Danville regarding this matter." From Haven Gaming LLC, in response to withdrawal of gaming application. Haven Gaming LLC has withdrawn the owner's gaming license application filed on October 28, 2019. The reason for this action is simply to prepare and submit a new application that is more suitable for the project and more accurately meets the expectations of the Gaming Board. Haven Gaming is committed to Danville and this project and plans to formulate a new application that is better aligned to meet the standards of the community and all deciding parties. We have reassessed the original application and have found areas for improvement and are eager to resubmit a solid application this August. From Williams in response to withdrawal of the gaming application by Haven Gaming LLC. Haven Gaming has made the city aware of its plans to withdraw its original application. This is a great opportunity for Danville to have a chance to review the new application by Haven Gaming LLC. I agree with the strategy and look forward to having the best possible application before the Illinois Gaming Board. In my experience with the Haven Gaming management team, I have seen a consistent level of professionalism and industry knowledge. I believe that they have the community's best interest in mind. The City of Danville is proud of our Casino Selection Committee and the process we used to select Haven Gaming LLC. This committee was formed to carefully vet all Danville Casino applicants and chaired by me to ensure the integrity of the process. This group is made up of our Public Works Chairman, Police Chief, Corporation Counsel, Economic Development CEO, and several business people from our community. I have reviewed and support the updated plan and ask that Haven come before our City Council to have their plan ratified for a third time on August 18th, 2020. Williams said the city doesn't have to reopen the application process to any interested developer or operating partner. We will not be reopening the process as it is the same company simply resubmitting an updated application, he said. He said the application changes include primarily partnership, ownership, and operator information. Williams doesn't know the timeline changes with the application resubmittal and the IGB review process. I imagine it will continue to be a slower process as it has been so far, he said. The IGB earlier this year, with a 3-to-1 vote, didn't allow Haven to amend its casino license application regarding changes with owners and key persons. A board member said he didn't consider even a bare bones application and thought it was more of a placeholder than a complete application. The Danville City Council, based on the local casino committee's recommendation, selected Haven Gaming LLC as the city's casino operating partner in October of 2019. Haven Gaming attorney Scott Sippold, who could not be reached for comment on Tuesday, said last month they are still confident in getting the job done. The bottom line is, we are the best in the best position to get Danville what they want as quickly as possible, Sipholt said. A gaming bill amendment from May allowed the IGB to extend the Danville casino application period for 6 months if a license isn't granted. Williams at this time said his understanding is that legislators wanted to ensure if the gaming board hadn't issued any licenses by October, as had been required, that it will still in the near future. The IGB started meeting in June again via teleconference, after meetings earlier this year did not occur due to the coronavirus pandemic. Under the gambling expansion bill enacted last year, lawmakers authorized 6 additional land-based casinos, including one in Danville. Still on the front page, the next article we will go to is Regions Flash Warning Sign for Positivity Rate Increase by Jerry Nowick at the Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced another 1,076 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Illinois on Tuesday, as the rolling 7-day positivity test rate remained at 3.8%. IDPH also reported that the rolling positivity rate in Region 4 of the state's COVID-19 mitigation plan, which includes the Metro East area of the Missouri border, reached 7.8% as of July 25th, or slightly less than the 8% mark that, if sustained for 3 days, would necessitate state intervention to mitigate the virus's spread. When Governor J.B. Pritzker laid out the state's coronavirus mitigation plan on July 15th, he said if a region has 3 consecutive days averaging greater than an 8% positivity rate on tests conducted, it would be a fail-safe metric requiring immediate action. Mitigation efforts would occur in 3 tiers, he said at the time, and would include rolling back some of the sectors of the economy to how they looked in previous phases of the state's COVID-19 reopening plan. In higher risk settings, such as indoor bars and restaurants, some restrictions could be triggered automatically. These include reduced indoor dining capacity and suspended indoor bar service in Tier 1, followed by suspended indoor dining in Tier 2, then takeout only in Tier 3. Other mitigation strategies would occur in other sectors of the economy. Additional meeting size restrictions would also be considered, along with remote work guidance or safety requirements for offices. In the other 10 regions, the rolling positivity rate was as low as 2.9% in Region 6, which includes much of eastern Illinois. But that rate had increased for 9 of the past 10 days as of July 25th. In southern Illinois' Region 5, the positivity rate was 6.5% as of July 25th, an increase of 2.7 percentage points over 1 week prior. All of the other regions ranged from 3.9% in western Illinois to 5.8% in Will and Kankakee counties. 6 of the 11 regions had seen their positivity rates tick upward for at least 7 of the past 10 days, another warning level, according to the state's mitigation plan. None of them, however, had seen the necessary hospitalization increases to warrant state action for rolling back reopening plans. The new cases reported by IDPH were among 28,331 test results completed over the previous 24 hours, marking for a 1-day statewide positivity rate of 3.8%. The department also reported another 30 COVID-19-related deaths, bringing the total number of fatalities since the pandemic first reached Illinois to 7,446 among 173,731 confirmed cases throughout the state's 102 counties. The number of hospital beds in use by COVID-19 patients remains relatively level near pandemic lows. At the end of Monday, 1,383 people in Illinois were hospitalized with COVID-19, including 329 in intensive care unit beds and 128 on ventilators. Meanwhile, Attorney General Kwame Raoul has joined a coalition of attorneys general across the U.S. looking to return COVID-19 data collection to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, not solely the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. In a letter sent Tuesday to U.S. DHHS Secretary Alex Azar, Raoul and 21 other attorneys general urged the department to restore the CDC to its rightful role as the primary authority over and source of information about the nation's public health data. They look to overturn a directive displacing the CDC with HHS, claiming the directive imperils public health and dangerously undermines transparency during the COVID-19 pandemic. The CDC has nearly 75 years of experience in mitigating the spread of diseases and illnesses, Raoul said in a news release. Removing the CDC from the system for reporting hospital COVID-19 data will significantly inhibit its ability to battle this pandemic, which has sickened and taken the lives of thousands throughout the United States, including more than 7,400 in Illinois. Also signing the letter were Attorneys General of California, Connecticut, the District of Columbia, Delaware, Hawaii, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington. At this time, we'll go to the death notices. Shirley M. C. Simpson, 91, of Westville, passed away on Friday, July 24th. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. on Friday, July 31st, at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Graveside service will follow at 11 a.m. at Danville National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made in Shirley's name to the Macular Foundation. Mary Margaret Unitas, 97, passed away on July 20th in Danville, Illinois. A graveside service for Mary will take place at 10 a.m. on Monday, July 27th at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Reginald Jean Martin, 72, of Oakwood, passed away on July 25th, 2020. Private family services will be held at a later date. Lorna Eleanor Rusk, 91, passed away on Sunday, July 26th. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, July 29th at Dickerson Funeral Home in Vetersburg, Indiana. Funeral will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, July 20th at Dickerson Funeral Home, with burial to follow at Rockfield Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family is requesting memorial donations be made to the Vetersburg Fire Department. Joseph C. Buck, 65, of Rossville, passed away on July 23, 2020. Visitation will take place on Thursday, July 30th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. There will also be a one-hour visitation prior to the service, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Friday, July 31st, at the Rossville United Methodist Church in Rossville, Illinois. A celebration of life service will take place at 11 a.m. on Friday, the 31st, at the church. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that memorial donations be made in Joe's name to the Mustard Seed Christian Daycare of Rossville, American Heart Association, or Donor's Choice. John H. Thompson, 72, of Danville, passed away on Tuesday, July 21st. Memorial services to be announced at a later date. Yvonne Elizabeth Aldridge passed away on July 24th, 2020. She was from Danville. The family will be having a private service for her on July 31st, 2020. Victoria Vicky Ratzu, 75, died on July 23rd, 2020, in Phoenix, Arizona. A funeral service will be held on Thursday, July 30th, at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church of Danville, in Danville, Illinois. Vicky will be laid to rest at Johnson Cemetery, Samuel Sam Lee Yates passed away on July 17th, 2020. A graveside service and celebration of life will be held at a later date. Interment will be in Rankin Union Cemetery in Rankin, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Park Vermilion County, Indiana Humane Society. Donna Mae LaFoe, 76, of rural Vetersburg, passed away on Monday, July 27th. Funeral service will be at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 31st, at Dickerson Funeral Home in Vetersburg. Visitation will be at 11 a.m. Friday at the funeral home and continue until the time of service at 1. Memorial contributions may be given to the Vetersburg Fire Department. Cheryl Jane Taylor passed away on July 13th, 2020. We'll now return to the front page of the paper, this time for the article Creative Camp: Hands-on Projects Promote Science by Carol Rome, Danville. Children worked on a number of fast-paced hands-on projects Tuesday morning during a science camp at the Danville Family YMCA. They learned about propulsion, customized face masks, planted seeds in a test tube garden, and made vampire string slime. However, this year's week-long camps, which are held annually at both the Boys and Girls Club and the Danville Family YMCA, were scaled down due to the COVID-19 concerns. Beth Chamberlain, a retired Danville High School chemistry and physics teacher, has been overseeing the camp for more than 15 years and said she was determined to make the popular activity happen, even if she had to make some changes. "We had the whole camp laid out earlier this year," she said. "I kept in contact with the Y and the Boys and Girls Club, and I had to rethink everything." "Everything had to be individualized and sterilized," she said. "This year, for example, they are taking the supply bins and their markers home." The number of children attending this year's camp, as well as the number of young adult helpers, also is significantly reduced compared to previous years. So many 3rd through 8th graders attended last year's camp at the Boys and Girls Club. Chamberlain had to divide the camp by age into 3 90-minute sessions. This year, 25 children attended the camp last week at the Boys and Girls Club, and another 11 are signed up for this week's camp at the Y. Mackenzie Zarn and Kendall Cleveland are the two young adult helpers. On the second day of camp at the Y, the youngsters learned about propulsion during an outdoor demonstration in which Chamberlain lit alcohol vapors to launch a tennis ball wedged at one end of a PVC pipe. "I can't do it again because all the oxygen is out of it," she said of trying to launch the tennis ball again. Children also had the option of tie-dyeing a cloth face mask using colorful markers and alcohol or using bluing solution. The youngsters unanimously chose the bluing solution that turned the white cloth masks into an ocean blue. Next, children were intrigued by touching a mysterious cotton-like substance to which they added water. The substance then turned into a gel. 8-year-old CJ Crop Morris first guessed the substance was salt. "It has tickly things," he told Chamberlain. The youngsters were surprised to find out the substance was the absorbent material found inside a diaper. Children learned about a similar substance called sodium polyacrylate crystals, which can be added to dirt when planting seeds. "If you put them in the dirt with your plants, you don't have to water them as frequently," Chamberlain explained. After adding water to the sodium polyacrylate crystals and turning it into a gel, the children struck their hands into a container of the stuff. 8-year-old Tyree Evans exclaimed, "It's icky." The children filled test tubes and small plastic bags with the gel and then poked sunflower, pea, and cord seeds into the gel. "You need to check on these every day," Chamberlain told the campers. "The cool thing about these crystals is that they're clear, so you can see the roots go down and the stem come up." The last project the youngsters tackled Tuesday was making a vampire string slime. First, the children stirred a solution of water and laundry detergent crystals in a clear cup. "That's what's called an activator," Chamberlain said. Now we're going to make a chemical reaction. Next, each child's cup received a squirt of string slime liquid. Your slime is made from seaweed, Chamberlain said. It's one of the components of it. The liquid solidified into a string-like consistency. Looking at the gelatinous strings with a flashlight shining on it made it appear green on one side and orange on the other. With a black light, the stringy slime glowed in the dark. When asked what their favorite project was so far at the camp, CJ said it was making the slime. 9-year-old Demario Crop Morris said, definitely planting the seeds. At today's camp, Danville Area Community College microbiology instructor Wendy Brown will bring a variety of reptiles and amphibians to show the campers. Last week, Brown showed off a California king snake, a leopard gecko, a box turtle, and an African desert tortoise at the Boys and Girls Club. For some more local coverage, we'll head to the local page, first with the article, 18-year-old injured in shooting, a staff report, Danville. An 18-year-old Danville man was injured in an early morning shooting. At around 5:19 a.m. on Tuesday, July 28th, Danville police responded to the OSF Hospital emergency room in reference to a victim with gunshot wounds. Upon arrival, officers met with an 18-year-old Danville man who had non-life-threatening gunshot wounds to both legs. The victim said he was walking in the area of Williams and Pixley Streets when he heard several shots fired from an unknown direction. The victim stated after he was struck by the gunfire, he went home and then got a ride to the hospital from a family member. There is no suspect information available at this time. The investigation into this incident continues, and no other information is being released at this time. Next, we'll go to the article, Man Arrested for Entering Residence, another staff report. An Indianapolis man was arrested for entering a Covington, Indiana residence. According to the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department, at about 5:14 a.m. on Tuesday, July 28th, the sheriff's dispatch received a 911 call of an individual breaking into a residence on U.S. Highway 136. The reporting party made contact with the individual inside the residence and held him there until law enforcement arrived on scene. Once law enforcement arrived, the suspect, Marcelo Pedro, 30, of Indianapolis, became argumentative. When deputies attempted to place Pedro in custody, he began to actively resist. After a brief struggle, deputies were able to take him into custody without injury. Pedro was transported to the Vermilion County Jail and booked on the following charges: residential entry, resisting law enforcement, and criminal mischief. Pedro's bond was to be $10,000 with a 10% allowed. Under the law, criminal charges are merely accusations, and the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty. Actual filing of charges for the state is done by the prosecutor after review of the case information. And next, the article, Paris Man Arrested After High-Speed Pursuit, an additional staff report. Vermilion County, Indiana. Deputies arrested a Paris man on Monday after a high-speed pursuit. At approximately 9:28 p.m. on Monday, deputies were on routine patrol when they observed a light blue Dodge Charger traveling southbound on State Route 63 from State Route 36. According to the deputy's radar unit, the vehicle was traveling at 112 miles per hour in a 60 mile per hour zone. The deputies turned around and attempted to catch up to the vehicle. Deputies caught up to the vehicle at SR 63 and State Route 163 and initiated a traffic stop. The driver of the vehicle, later identified as Dalton O. Seffler, 27, of Paris, Illinois, pulled over just north of Hazel Bluff Road on State Route 63. When deputies exited their vehicle and began to approach, they stopped the vehicle. Seffler took off at a high rate of speed. Deputies began to pursue Seffler, but lost sight of the vehicle in the New Goshen area. Another officer spotted Seffler southbound on U.S. Highway 150 near St. Mary of the Woods. When Seffler noticed that officers were once again following him, he began to flee. Vigo County units, along with the Indiana State Police, were able to deploy stop sticks and get Seffler's vehicle to stop. a small amount of marijuana was discovered on Seifler, and several hypodermic needles were found in his trunk. Seifler was transported to the Vermilion County Jail, where he submitted to standardized field sobriety tests. After failing those tests, Seifler agreed to chemical testing per Indiana's implied consent law. Seifler was transported to Union Hospital Clinton for testing and tested positive for cannabinoids. Seifler was brought back to the Vermilion County Jail and booked on the following charges: operating a vehicle while intoxicated, controlled substance, resisting law enforcement with a vehicle, possession of marijuana, intimidation on law enforcement, criminal recklessness, reckless driving, and unlawful possession of a syringe. Seifler was being held for a mandatory sobering period before being able to bond out at $10,000. Under the law, criminal charges are merely accusations, and the defendant is presumed innocent until proven guilty. Now for some updates on what's going on in the local area, we'll go to the community brief section. First, in Danville, clerk's office closed. The Vermilion County Clerk's Office will be closed from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday for staff enrichment. For any questions, call 554-1900. Also in Danville, yoga, wine offered. Yoga at the Fisher will be held Wednesdays, starting next week. Doors open at 5 p.m., and yoga starts at 5:15. Your registration fee includes yoga with a certified instructor and wine. Steph Stevenson will lead you through a yoga routine suitable for all levels on the historic Fisher Theater stage. Classes are from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on August 5th, 12th, 19th, and 26th. Cost is $15 per class, or $40 for all four sessions. Registration is limited and is available online. Yoga mats are available at class. Also in Danville, Weatherford to speak. Leary Weatherford will speak to the Danville Lions Club at noon on Thursday. The club meets at Spanky's Banquet Hall at 409 East Main Street. Also, band to perform. The Danville Municipal Band will perform at 7 p.m. on Sunday at Lincoln Park. This is the band's final performance for the season. And finally in Danville, reunions canceled. The Column family reunion, set for Sunday at Ward Park, has been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Also, the Thatcher-Johnson reunion, scheduled for August 8th at the Westville Park, has also been canceled. And with those updates, that's going to be about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, July 29, 2020. As always, thanks for joining me today, and please continue to stay safe.